Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Welcome to another wonderful episode of Inside Acting. On the line with me is my fantastic co-host,
Nadia Williams.
And I have to tell you that Inside Acting is brought to you by DC Actors Examiner, a column about acting most easily found by Googling DC Actors Examiner. If you haven't already read the column, it's an outstanding column, and I encourage you to go out and read it. And to receive regular updates, go ahead and subscribe. Who's on the show tonight, Nadia?
Well, we have the award-winning Emmy director, Eric Christopher Myers, and Baltimore actor, Kelvin Drama Page, who I got the chance to work with on the film Soulmate.
You know, I was saw online that Kim Hwang, who was one of our guests not too long ago, he said that Kelvin Page is one of the funniest cats out there. So we're going to find out tonight.
Yeah, he tried. You know, he cracked a few jokes when I was around, but you know, I don't know. We'll see how funny he is.
What's going on in the news?
Well, there's an interesting show that's going to be starting this June, and it's called The Choice. And if it sounds kind of like The Voice, there's a reason for it. Fox is launching this new show since The Voice took some of American Idol's ratings this season. And it kind of sounds like an April Fool's joke to me. You know, this new series is going to feature contestants in blind auditions for a quartet of celebrity judges who are seated in spinning chairs, like in The Voice. Except the big difference, instead of music competition, this is a dating show.
What would they come up with next?
You know, these are not the kind of shows that I watch, but it's just kind of interesting to see that this is what gets come up with. So, yeah, famous faces are going to audition their potential love interests, and Fox is not ready to announce the participating celebrities just yet, but the show's host will be Kat Deely, who's going to be pulling double duty while hosting So You Think You Can Dance this summer. And, of course, The Choice has more in common with The Voice than just the chairs, like that title. And Fox plans to air 6 one-hour episodes this summer, debuting the show on Thursday, June 7th at 9 p.m. 5 of the episodes will have male celebrities with female contestants, and 1 will have female celebrities with male contestants. I kind of feel like that's a little bit of discrimination there.
Yeah, I think you might be right about that. I mean, that's one more reason to hate reality TV. They just come up with these cockamamie ideas, and it's just like they're cheap to produce, and there's no writing, there's no plot. I mean, and they have these artificial situations they come up with. Everything has to have a celebrity. I used to watch, The Apprentice? And it was good when it had regular folks. They were colorful, regular folks. You know, when I was a kid in the 70s and early 80s, there was a show, Real People, I think was a show back in the day. And they had, they were real people. And it's okay to have some reality, but have, you know, real people, not just have everything be about celebrities.
There's too much of it going on out there. But unfortunately, this is what the masses want to watch, so... I think we're really lucky that we get to talk with, you know, indie filmmakers from the area on this show.
That's what's up. That's right. And speaking of which, I see here we have Mr. Eric Christopher Myers has joined us. How are you doing, Eric?
I'm doing very, very well. Thanks for having me.
Welcome, Eric.
Thank you much. I appreciate it.
I'm glad to have you on the show. So I want you to talk about your award-winning film, Roulette, which some people are calling a masterpiece. I mean, what is it about this film that makes it so special?
That's really tough for me to say. It's going to connect with different people for different reasons on different levels. The film is about three people playing a game of Russian roulette and the backstories that are told as we go around the table. In a circle, we're also seeing the backstories and what brought these three people to this moment in time. It touches on a lot of taboo sort of subjects, pro-life versus pro-choice, religion, race, rape, addiction, infidelity, lots of very, very, you know, hot-button topics. And so I think there's a little something to, you know, upset everybody out there.
Yeah, I mean, I've read a lot about it, and it's, I mean, there's even a documentary on it. Was it Luck of the Draw?
Yeah, there's a filmmaker named Ethan Meyer who has done a series of behind-the-scenes featurettes. He was following the film from the very, very beginning up to the end, and sort of taking a, you know, behind-the-curtain look at how a no-budget independent film that's striving to look like it had some money, striving to, you know, sort of raise the bar, how that put together with scotch tape and popsicle sticks.
Hmm. Talk about your approach to casting.
Well, when I started Roulette, it's my first feature, and I'd done a number of shorts before, and I'd gone through the film program at Towson University, so I was plugged into a number of actors with whom I'd worked or who I knew by reputation in other films or what have you. And I didn't go out of my way to do any sort of, you know, casting calls or, you know, major hunt or anything along those lines. I had a group of actors that I had my eye on for a long time. Some of them, like Mike Baldwin and Ali Lupowski, who play two of the three main roles I'd worked with before, and I did for a very long time, and sort of wrote the roles for them and said, look, you know, if you want it, it's on the table. It's yours. I'm not going to make you audition. I know what you're capable of doing. It's yours. All you have to do is say yes and, you know, commit to doing some very, very challenging material. Other actors, like I said, I knew from the region, and, you know, I touched base with them while I was writing the script and said, hey, look, I've got this project that I'm putting together right now, and I think you'd be perfect for this role. Are you interested? And then for some of the supporting roles, it was, you know, it was sort of blind chance. You know, this person referred that person, and, you know, it just kind of came together organically.
Yeah, that's the way some directors, that's the way they actually cast. It's sort of it's very kind of an informal kind of thing. It's kind of like based on people they know.
Yeah, it was very much one of those sort of situations. The only time that I actually did anything approaching an actual audition was, we had a situation a year after the film was shot. It was actually just about in the can, completely finished with post-production. And for a number of very distressing and ugly and very, very public reasons, we had to recast one of the supporting leads, which meant redoing about 20% of the film. So at that time, you know, things had kind of changed. And we had a trailer for the film out, and the featurettes that you mentioned were on the internet, and just the fact that we'd had this gigantic, you know, sort of very public divorce with one of the actors had gotten our story written up on some websites, and we'd gotten a lot of attention. So at that point, rather than being, you know, a filmmaker fresh out of film school with, you know, absolutely zero cred, people were aware of the film, and, you know, I had people throwing headshots at me wanting to be a part of it, and that was a very, very cool thing to be able to, you know, say, look, rather than going after somebody that I know or know by association, I want to find a new, fresh face. I've already shot film. It's kind of burnt into my brain. I want to approach it with, you know, without any baggage. I want to bring somebody new to the table, and I had the opportunity to read a number of very, very talented actors, and it was a very exciting process.
Wow.
Can you talk a little bit about where you got the idea for Roulette?
It's hard to say, because I've written a number of scripts. Some of them, like I said, were shorts that I've shot before, and a number of scripts that I hope to do later on down the road. And in every single case, the idea just kind of, you know, appears to me in the shower, or, you know, just kind of out of the blue. I don't really do a lot of research. I don't do a lot of, you know, poking around, thinking about what I want to write next. It just kind of pops into my brain. In the case of Roulette, I had seen a number of years ago a televised suicide from a guy named R. Bud Dwyer or Dwyer, I'm not sure how the name is pronounced, but he committed suicide at a press conference. He shot his head off. And it was aired on TV, and it messed a lot of people up, and it messed me up when I saw it. And it was one of the things that kind of stayed in my brain. And I always thought about it, and I thought about, you know, what would bring a person to, you know, commit suicide in the first place? You know, there's just ripe for storytelling, but what would cause somebody to do it in such a messy, horrible way with a firearm? But then on top of that, to do it in front of other people, you know, to actually be willing to do that in front of an audience. And it got me thinking about the idea of Russian roulette, of people just sort of, you know, so over their lives that they're willing to sort of roll the dice on it and, you know, take fate into their own hands and be able to do that. It was a compelling idea. You think about, you know, different reasons why people would want to do that. And so there was just a lot of storytelling material there to mine.
Yeah, I was lucky enough. I got to watch the film last night, and I thought it was very powerful. And, you know, I'm very drawn to psychological thrillers, and there was just this wonderful build-up to the ending, which, of course, I'm not going to give away.
Yeah, it's interesting, I think, when you allow the story to write itself. A lot of screenwriters will say that, you know, you want to plot, outline, and, you know, make all sorts of crazy notes so that, you know, that could be done. And I'm not going to argue with that because, you know, William Goldman is William Goldman. But at the same time, I find that when I'm writing a script, it's much more interesting to let the characters sort of make the decision for me. If I try to force a character down a certain road, often they'll be stubborn and they'll fight me on it, and they'll make decisions that I never saw coming. So a lot of the more challenging thematic material in the film was not premeditated, you know, by any stretch of the imagination. It was sort of thing where I said, okay, well, I want Mike Baldwin's character to have sort of a, you know, mystery, and he's in a wheelchair, and I want Will Haas's character to be an alcoholic who's unhappy with his life, and I want Ali Lukowski's character to be a Christian who's, you know, adamantly pro-life and, you know, gets pregnant and has to make a decision. And from there, I just sort of let them make their own choices, and I was as surprised as a lot of people saw the film, you know, where it went.
Eric, we have a caller here. It looks like this might be Mr. Kelvin Page. Is this Kelvin? Hello? Who's on the line? Okay, I guess that's nobody. Okay, so you were saying?
I'm sure. Well, Eric, can you divulge anything about the next Eric Christopher Myers film that I've been seeing on Facebook?
I'm not saying a whole lot about it right now. It's a script that I wrote a couple of years ago that was always sort of my dream project, and it's going to require a much larger scale than what I'm capable of doing at the time. I'd chopped this script around, and I had some interest from some Hollywood types, and, you know, at the time, because I'd just done short films, and, you know, I'd won a few student awards, and that was all very, very cool, but I'd never directed a feature film, and there was absolutely no way that I was going to be able to inspire anyone with money to allow me to helm a film sort of this scope. It's not so much that it was ridiculously expensive, but it had franchise potential. And so I needed to be able to direct a feature film and sort of, you know, show that I was capable of handling some very challenging thematic material, that I could do some very dark things. And, you know, essentially, like I said before, you know, take scotch tape and popsicle sticks and, you know, make it look like I had money that I didn't really have. I'm not necessarily in a position right now where I've got millions of dollars at my disposal, but I do have resources I didn't have before, and I'm hoping to do something that, you know, really raises the bar for, you know, at least, you know, raises the bar in terms of what I've already done. And it could be something that really stands out in the local scene. Right now it's a little premature to talk about it too much, but, you know, I'm definitely plotting the next course.
Well, Eric, talk about your association with Paul Schrader and Wes Craven.
Paul Schrader, the way that came about was a couple years ago I was writing for a website called bloodynews.com. It's no longer on the internet, but at the time it was an emerging website. It was a lot of film theory and film criticism specifically for the horror genre. And I was doing a lot of reviews, a lot of criticism, and getting to meet with some directors and actors and do some, you know, interviews and things of that nature. And the long and the short of it was that about 8 years ago, Morgan Creek Productions decided to make a prequel to The Exorcist.
Hmm.
And they hired Paul Schrader to shoot it, and he delivered an art house film that they didn't like on any level whatsoever, and shelved it. And they hired Rennie Harlan to essentially remake the exact same film. That film came out in theaters, and it was a colossal failure. And so everybody sort of, you know, had this giant question mark over their heads. Well, what about that film that Paul Schrader made that was put on the shelf? How could that possibly be any worse than what was released?
How did they remade it?
Yeah, they did. They did. That was the one that came out in the theaters. And the one that was sitting on the shelf, they were never planning to release. And I called Schrader up and said, look, I'm a writer. I'm a big fan of the genre as well as, you know, the Exorcist franchise. And I kind of, you know, muscled my way in the door and got an invitation to his office in New York and came up. And he screened the film for me privately. And I did a review of it. And he gave me the first exclusive tell-all about the whole, all the dirty laundry and everything that went down. And the next thing I know, it exploded all over the Internet. And, you know, got me a lot of attention, got me written up. I think it was quoted in Variety and Fangoria. It was an extremely cool thing.
Wow.
It was a very exciting thing. And the upshot was that the studio screened his shelved film at a film festival in Brussels. And I had sort of rolled out a carpet for it. And, you know, given it sort of, you know, some really, really positive goodwill. And the critics loved it. And the studio ended up releasing it to DVD.
That's great. I mean, that's what's up. Wow. Too bad you didn't see any profits.
Yeah, yeah. unfortunately, no. But, you know, it did put me in touch with some people, and it gave me some exposure and, you know, allowed me to get published in some other, you know, some other publications, and, you know, that's all good stuff.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about, Wes Craven. What's the deal with him? I know he's the creator of Scream and A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, he saw the script for the film that I'm planning to do next and expressed a lot of interest in it. He was definitely a fan. So that was a cool thing. Again, you know, a lot of opportunities came to me via the Exorcist franchise connection. And I was able to, you know, get scripts seen by some folks, and also had the blind good luck of another filmmaker in this, you know, the Baltimore region named Armando Vage, passed some materials to Wes Craven when he met him. And the next thing I know, Wes Craven's people were calling me about the script.
It was, wow. You know,
just that's incredible.
Yeah, it's cool. You know, I mean, it's, you know, on the one hand you say, you know, I'll never make it, I'll never get there, but you never know what's going to happen when you turn a corner.
Well, you got to keep walking, just keep putting one foot in front of the other and just keep walking. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Absolutely. You know, you just got to keep, I mean, the thing with filmmaking is that, you know, at the end of the day, you can talk a good game, but it's the work that you produce that's really going to get you recognized and really going to get you noticed. And it was very inspiring to get attention for some scripts that I wrote, but, you know, I'm hoping that the film that I've made now is what's really going to help me make, you know, some sort of a mark on the map. I don't have any sort of, you know, delusions that I'm going to be walking the red carpet, you know, at Cannes or Sundance or anything like that in the next 6 months. But, you know, the whole plan with Roulette was really just to crack a door. And, you know, that was cracking a door for myself, for the very, very talented crew, for the very, very talented cast. And just to get our faces and our names out there. And that's really, really what it's all about. And you can do that by making an okay film. But I wanted to really, really try to shoot higher than that. I wanted to make a film with a capital F and, you know, to show people that I was serious about this, that I meant business. And it's not a film for everybody. It's not the sort of thing you take your grandmother to. But, you know, by the same token, there is an audience for a really, really dark, compelling, and challenging film. And, you know, if you can tap into them, you know, I think that films like Donnie Darko that, you know, appear in the theater, you know, on maybe 100 screens, and barely do any box office at all, but then explode on college campuses once it shows up on DVD. There are tons of films like that. And
right.
just trying to make a film that's going to connect with an audience.
Films that make
right.
you think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I like being challenged by films. And some people, you know, some people just want to be entertained, and that's cool, too. I love The Avengers as much as everybody else did, and that's not a film where you need to, you know, put on your thinking cap and give it a lot of thought. It's a roller coaster ride, and that's great. But, you know, sometimes I like to be challenged. Sometimes I like, you know, filet mignon. And, you know, I'm not by any stretch of the imagination saying that what I've done, you know, is you know, this genius work of art. I'll leave that to other people to say if they choose to. But it was the best film that I could possibly make with the resources that I had. And, you know, I tried as many different storytelling tricks as I possibly could and narrative styles to try to, you know, capture people's attention.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is I know that they say that the independent films, they say horror is a good first independent film because it sells better. It's easier to get distribution. How much truth do you think there is to that?
I think that's 100% true. I mean, I think that horror is, you know, it's that one genre where you don't necessarily need a name actor. You don't necessarily need a name director. It helps. It definitely helps. But, you know, if you can splash some sort of lurid cover on the DVD and, you know, put that in the video store, put that on Netflix or what have you, people are going to grab it. People are going to want to see what's up. And I love horror. As I said before, I've been writing about it for many, many years. And when I wrote Roulette, I was very, very conscious that I didn't want to do a horror film. And it wasn't because I didn't love the genre. It was simply because I felt that that's what so many people were doing for their first film. And maybe I was an idiot for trying to go the other direction, but I wanted to go in the other direction. Yet at the same time, the film ended up with, you know, elements that come right out of the horror genre. The end of the film in particular is, you know, it's caused a lot of buzz in the area. It's a very upsetting and nasty thing. And, you know, I think more akin to what the horror genre really represents than, you know, a zombie or, you know, somebody stabbing some chick with fake implants. It's a very, very nasty and brutal ending. But, you know, I still wanted to stay away from that genre if I could, but, you know, spice it that way.
Yeah.
Basically.
And what are your plans for distribution with Roulette?
We've had a couple of offers, and right now we're just sort of playing the field. We're taking advantage of the fact that we've gotten some really good reviews, and the film's won 7 awards right now. I hope it wins more. If it doesn't, that's cool too. But if it does, it just makes the film. And that's sort of the goal right now, is to be able to say, look, we've got a really good product. And,
hello.
You know, it's really well.
Hello, Kelvin. Hold on, Eric. Kelvin?
Hello?
Hello, this is Kelvin.
Oh, this is Bruno. I was just listening to the show, that's all.
Oh, okay. All right. You have a question?
No, I kept getting bumped off, but, you know, it was a great show, so I had some free time, so I just thought I would listen to it for right now.
Okay. Hey, well, thanks. Thanks for the call.
No problem at all.
All right. Bye. Okay, Eric, so you were saying?
Oh, I was just saying that, you know, it's, right now we're just considering our options, and, you know, having some awards and some good quotes, it helps make the film more valuable, and you can show it to more people that way.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about, I know we kind of glossed, we talked about it a little bit earlier, but we kind of didn't give it enough play. Luck of the Draw. Now, that was basically, well, it's two things I was curious about. Luck of the Draw, and actually that was a documentary about your movie, and then there was another documentary that you made, and that was Devil's Playthings. That was the one where you're, well, not really a documentary, but it was sort of a,
it's a,
well, yeah, well, wait a minute, that was an ultra-low budget film, and then you had another one that was a documentary. Talk about those.
Yeah, The Devil's Playthings is a script that I wrote, and it's sort of a satire of ultra low budget horror films. It you know, sort of looks at the, you know, the best of the absolute worst of schlocky no budget horror flicks. It's not a parody of any, you know, anybody's specific film or, you know, any one type of horror film. It's just kind of embracing the idea of the antiquated mini DV direct to DVD sort of horror flick where you can see boom mics dropping into the shot and, you know, the acting is way over the top and everything like that. It was a nice sort of antidote to what we were trying to do when we were making Roulette, where we said we wanted to try to really go out of our way to make it look like we had money and resources that we didn't have. And then with The Devil's Playthings, it was really a case of sort of, you know, throwing our arms and embracing the fact that we didn't have any money. And it's a very, very funny, very, very fun sort of film. It's sort of like the horror films that you'll find at Best Buy in those boxes of 50 schlocky horror films.
Oh, okay.
The $4 bin.
Exactly.
Yeah, $4 bin. Yeah.
So it's one of those sort of deals. Film One, on the other hand, is a documentary that I've been working on for a couple of years. And ironically, the subject of the documentary is two film students who went to Towson University who were first-year film students trying to make their first project, shooting on 16-millimeter film and having to screen the thing for their peers and their instructors and, you know, all of the stress and the pressure and everything that could go wrong, going wrong while they were making it. Kind of a micro, you know, it's like looking at what happens on big budget films on a, you know, a micro scale. And the really funny thing about it is that the one film student that I followed of the two is named Ethan Meyer, and he then, after he finished school, ended up turning the camera around on me, and he's the one that made the luck of the draw making a Roulette documentary series. So he followed me around documenting me, and it was a really interesting, you know, way that came about.
Yeah, that's the way it goes sometimes. I watched a little bit of the Luck of the Draw last night, and I saw, you know, you guys were filming kind of in my neighborhood. I'm in the Canton neighborhood of Baltimore, and I heard you had a lot of problems.
Yeah, it was just, I mean, it's like any location you go to is going to be fraught with issues, and this apartment, it just happened to be, you know, right there in the middle of Canton, and, you know, there's all sorts of noise that's going on outside, right outside your door, people screaming, people yelling, you know, an ambulance that pulled up with its siren on and then just sat there for half an hour and wouldn't go away, but didn't actually pick anybody up and, you know, wasn't there for an emergency. The blooper reel is filled with all sorts of, you know, takes of us trying to shoot this one particular very, very heavy, intense scene, and, you know, the actors just couldn't get through any of their takes because people were screaming outside the door. It's funny now. It's an absolute nightmare.
That's fun.
Lucky to have, you know, such a committed cast who, you know, really, really rose to the occasion and, you know, took this extremely dark material and had the patience to not only get through it, but to get through it with, you know, all sorts of issues of that sort. And they happen, you know, on every set.
Eric, you've been a fantastic guest, man. You really have a lot of knowledge, a lot of passion. We're definitely going to have you on again.
Thank you.
Yeah, I see great things for you. I mean, I really do. I really see great things. We're down to about 60 seconds, so I'm going to give you the next 45 of them to just blast the world with everything you want to say, any promotional spiel. Put in your plug. Go.
www.roulettefilm.com. Check it out. You can see the trailer for the film. It's got links to interviews, reviews, The Luck of the Draw, the Making of Roulette series. Or you can just go to YouTube, type in Roulette and my name, or Luck of the Draw, and a whole string of videos is going to pop up. Check it out, see what we're about, see the movie, support independent film.
Well, that's what's up, man. That's what it's about, self-promotion. Okay, well, man, I thank you for coming on again. I think this was a great show, and I'm going to go ahead and close and just tell all my actor listeners out there to do something for your career every day and break a leg.